The official Danko Jones podcast is brought to you with the help of Skull Candy headphones and Blue Mic microphones. Check them out at skullcandy.com and bluemic.com. Well, I know that the podcast has been a little tardy as of late, and that's only because me and Nick Flanagan, had a bunch of things to do. When you're hearing this, I will be on tour already in Europe, so that's one of the reasons why we had a lot of other things to take care of first. And Nick, as you will hear on the podcast, was doing his own stuff, and that's what we ended up talking about for most of the podcast. I hope you enjoy it. If you're enjoying all the podcasts, please do me a favor and Nick a favor and subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. You can subscribe to it and leave a review as well. It would be great. It just helps the podcast out and it helps the profile get up and up and up on iTunes. And that's what we kind of want to do eventually. So enjoy, sit back, relax, enjoy. The official Danko Jones podcast begins now. Where the fuck were you, Nick?
I'm right here.
No, where were you?
I was in Texas, Austin, Texas.
You just came back last night.
Yes. I was there, and I was festivaling and eating tacos and having a blast. The time of my life, sort of.
I got a phone call from Nick last night, and he had just gotten home from the airport, and he said, "Hey, did you hear about what happened in Austin and Glenn Danzig and all that stuff?" So what happened with Glenn Danzig?
Well, I arrived Saturday, so I wasn't actually there in person for it. But as soon as I showed up, everybody was saying, "Dude, did you hear about Danzig?" My friend was stage managing the stage that Danzig was playing. And
okay.
Danzig showed up. He wasn't feeling very well, apparently, from the moment he arrived. All of the Misfits guys and Tommy from Danzig were there, and they were ready to go, and he got to the stage about the area. He got to the area ready to sound check about 15 minutes before he was supposed to go on, made some demands, needed some French onion soup apparently, needed some other stuff, yelled at the stage manager, didn't go on stage until 20 minutes before the curfew of the outdoor event. Played four songs, two of which were new Danzig songs, one of which was Death Comes Ripping, though.
Nice.
Pretty awesome. And then four songs into it, they cut the power, and he tried to apparently start a riot.
It's Danzig.
Blame the promoters.
I'm sorry, but you're never, ever going to get me on the opposite side of Danzig. After we had our discussion, I hadn't heard or read anything about this incident, and I logged onto my email and I got an email from a third party. Maybe mm-hmm. you know him.
Okay.
Paul Shedlick. You know Paul?
Yes.
Yeah, he used to be in Foursquare and he was on our label in Europe. He's living in China now, and he sent me the link to the Danzig fiasco mm-hmm. in Austin. And so I've seen all the footage, mm-hmm. Know what you're talking about. And my conclusion is he's Glenn Danzig. He can do whatever he'd like to do. He is one of my personal heroes, and you got four songs. Be happy.
Two of which were like later Danzig songs, though.
Yeah, but I mean, that doesn't matter to me. I love Danzig through and through. You know, the only time I've ever almost cried mm-hmm. about not being able to play a show mm-hmm. was the three dates we were offered to open up for Glenn Danzig, I believe 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Out on the West Coast. And we couldn't because we had a conflict. We were already on tour somewhere. And I really got sad.
Well, I actually remember.
Almost cried, actually.
I saw Danzig a couple of times over the last few years. And especially 5 or 6 years ago, it was still a very, very, very strong show he was doing. Especially in a small venue. I saw him in Pennsylvania at a small venue, and it was amazing. And actually, I remember I got a picture with him
No way.
Yeah, with me and my friend and I, my friend was very, very obsessed with Danzig for the first 10 years of her 20s. And she went and took me to Pittsburgh in Allentown, Pennsylvania to see Danzig. Nice. And she waited, and he was in his bus watching wrestling. And then he came out, and he just kind of...
Makes sense.
Grimaced and did a little devil horn thing and took some pics with us.
That's the photo I want.
That's what you want with Danzig.
I think to have met him.
The picture with me in it, I believe I was a little out of frame, though, so you can't actually see me in the picture.
Actually, I had a chance, come to think of it, to meet Danzig this past May, or past June, May. Mm-hmm. We played in Columbus, Ohio, at a festival called Rock on the Range, and... there were all kinds of bands that day, but the only band I wanted to see was Glenn Danzig's band, Danzig.
That band?
Yeah. And I didn't get to see him, but I could have met him because Tommy from Danzig, Tommy Victor.
Yes, familiar with him. Met him.
Tommy's awesome. He used to be in Prong. Mm-hmm. He is Prong.
He worked at CBGB's.
He was in CBGB's Soundman while he was formulating Prong, and then Prong kind of took off, and they got signed, and they did a whole bunch of stuff, and they've put out some wicked records like Beg to Differ and...
Houses of the Holy?
No, Houses of the Holy was by Led Zeppelin.
Oh.
My favorite records are Beg to Differ and Prove You Wrong. Prove You Wrong was a very underrated record when it came out. Anyways, getting back to Danzig and Rock on the Range, I met Tommy there, and Tommy actually said, "Hey, you want to meet Glenn?" And that was the moment where I was face-to-face with the opportunity, and I turned it down. I just didn't want to meet. I told him, I go, I can't meet Glenn. I don't know if I want to. I just, I look up to him so much that I'd love to meet him. I mean, if we just bump into each other at a
gate
at an airport, that's one thing. But to, you know, be welcomed into his inner sanctum and stuff, I'd prefer to just to listen to the records and watch the guy from afar.
Well, I think that's what a lot of people seem to want with him, and he seems to support that when this kind of stuff happens and it just freaks everyone out. I mean, it's everybody at this festival was excited to have especially this configuration playing. This is Danzig doing Samhain and Misfit stuff.
Yeah.
This is the organizer of the festival, one of them at least, Graham, I think. He wanted them to play Skulls. He was dying to have them play Skulls.
And I think it's he posted on his blog after the whole incident.
Yeah, you read all that.
I read what he had posted. It makes sense from his point of view. I would be pissed off too if I was him. I'm not trying to say that he doesn't have an argument. I'm just saying as a super fan.
I get it. The Danzig rule is in effect. Anything goes.
Yeah, when Danzig got punched out by that band, and there was the footage of Danzig pushing the guy. And
Monster Truck Posse? Was that their name?
No, it wasn't. They're hardcore.
Some guys, yeah.
I can't remember the name of the band, but when he got punched out, everybody was laughing, and I was the only one who didn't like what I saw. And I said, I don't like the fact that Danzig got punched out.
I don't think Danzig's dentist liked what he saw that much either. Actually, he probably did. He was like, I'm going to make a lot of money off of this beat
out
down.
Of this evil guy. But no, I didn't really like it.
I didn't care about
one of my heroes get punched out by some guy who, yeah, granted, he was pushed first, but if Danzig pushed me, I'd just walk away.
So everyone was bummed on that, but then one of the highlights of the weekend for me was seeing, of all bands, Ted Leo and the Pharmacists. Do you know them?
Oh, and on the website that I read and I saw the YouTube, they did.
It was awesome. They after his set, and he'd had vocal problems the whole set. He was super raspy. You know, he goes, it's too fucking hot up here, because he didn't, Danzig wanted a...
Oh, so the Ted Leo set happened after the Danzig fiasco.
Yes. And he has a Danzig cover band with some guys I know, this guy Andy Nelson from Paint It Black and some other bands, who also played the festival.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys get on stage and they do, you know, Bullet and Angel Fuck. They do
Where Eagles Dare.
Skulls, Where Eagles Dare. And it was great. He nailed it. He nailed it so much.
Listen, I've never met Ted Leo. I've only heard good things about him. He seems like a really nice guy, and he's got a lot of friends. But I can destroy his Glenn Danzig.
Oh, yeah?
On the vocals, at least.
Yeah?
He had the look down, I gotta say, and...
And the poses. He had the poses good.
He had the poses, and he looked pretty fit, so he had it down.
Vegan. I'm pretty sure he's vegan.
Is he vegan?
Yeah.
Really? That will yield you that body if you're vegan?
I mean, I don't think... Did he look fit? I haven't seen his body up close.
We're getting
pretty, like, the physique investigative right
now.
No,
we've just been talking about it for 10 seconds, but obviously you're not comfortable
10
with it.
10 Danko seconds.
No, I'm fine with talking about Ted Leo's physique, and I think he's got a good... He's worked out. He seems like he's pretty fit. He's got a good bod.
Ted, if you work out, let us know.
And hey, listen, Ted, I can destroy on the Glenn Danzig, but you're pretty fit.
I thought you did great. And then Slayer closed the night. It was pretty fun at the end of the weekend. I was kind of running back and forth between two stages because it was three stages. Last show was three stages. One stage was Blood Redhead. Other stage was
really
odd, yeah. Other stage was Odd Future, and then the other stage was Slayer.
What a heavy star-studded the lineup festival
was awesome. Like the Danzig night was one stage. Danzig, the other stage is Public Enemy. I forget what the other one.
I'd see all these.
Yeah,
bands
night after that was the Damned playing their first record in order. It was awesome.
They didn't cancel.
No, they were great. They were giving Danzig a lot of shit. Did they?
Yeah, we were supposed to go on tour of the Damned for a 2-week tour of the U.S. And the day before the tour started, they canceled because they didn't have their work papers ready. Kind of funny for a band who's been around for decades. They should know
about work papers.
How, you know? Papers and visas and all kinds.
Was this in U.S. You said?
Yeah, 2 weeks, 2-week tour with the Damned in the U.S. Up in Smoke.
That's like when I got the guy, the rapper MC Paul Barman, wouldn't let me open for him about 6 or 7 years ago.
Was I there at that show?
You were not at that show. That was a show organized by a legendary Toronto promoter, Dan Burke. And
most people don't know Dan.
Dan Burke is a promoter, local promoter.
Yep.
And Paul Barman. No, most people don't know Paul Barman. Either, I don't know
who he is either, dude.
He's like the smart rapper. He was on a Prince Among Thieves, the Prince Paul album. And then Prince Paul produced his first EP, and that got him
He's from Toronto?
No, he's from Brooklyn. Oh, okay. And he's actually, I think he lives there, but I think he went to Brown. He's like an Ivy League Jewish rapper guy where the lyrics are clever, but the actual execution is ridiculous. It's not... He's falling all over the beat, and
that sounds interesting, though.
Yeah, it's all right. There's a song called "I'm Freaking Awesome" that's cool. A song called "Cock Mobster" that's really funny because he does, you know, to the tune of "Rock Lobster." He says "Cock Mobster." And,
okay, now I got you.
Yeah, so
I'm bored already.
But it gets tiring. You're tired already. Did you say?
I'm
yeah,
fine.
It's too smart for its own good. Anyway, he wouldn't let me open for him, and he said he couldn't do a smart Jewish thing after me.
Really?
Yeah.
Fuck him. Nobody really cares what you have to say.
You get caught up in traffic because every day's a bad day.
You know, you can get pretty much anybody in the hip-hop world if you got the price. You know, in the punk rock world, even in the metal world and the indie rock world, it's not really about the price. It's more of the association.
Mm-hmm.
But in hip-hop, which is really refreshing, actually, because, you know, when you grow up in certain circles, it's great to be, you know, to keep your integrity intact, but sometimes it can be very tiring. Mm-hmm. In the hip-hop world, all you got to do is lay down the cash, and you can get anybody for anything. And I remember there was this rapper from Toronto. This is what reminded me was Whitey Don. Do you know Whitey Don?
Yeah, I'm familiar with Whitey Don.
Whitey Don put out a record. Now, I've never heard the record, but I've seen it in used record stores, and one day I saw it, and I took it off the shelf, and I turned the back, and he had duets with Busta Rhymes and KRS-One.
Right.
And I'm just thinking, well, how did he get them? I'm sure he knows people, he's connected.
Duets. I've never really heard of a song with a guest referred to as a duet. guest box.
Okay, so he traded Rhymes with Busta Rhymes and KRS-One on his album, and it just got me thinking, well, you mean to tell me that if I put out a record, I can get anyone I want if I had the right amount of money? Now, I don't have a lot of money.
Come
especially
on.
Not to put out a hip-hop record, but I would throw some money around if I could get even C-level rappers, like Craig Mack. If I can get Craig Mack for like a grand.
Do you call him C-level because his name starts with the C?
Yeah, because then there'll be Capadonna, too. If I can get Capadonna and Craig Mack for like a grand each, and I heard that Capadonna will do a rhyme for a grand.
Cuckoo Cal. Cuckoo Cal's with a K, actually.
Coco Brothers.
Coco Bees. I think they'd probably do it for a grand. Actually, I know these guys are doing it for a grand because I've heard about it. You can get them.
You can get anybody for a grand.
For a grand. Now, okay, so that's laying down the money for the
not that I have a grand
appearance, right?
Not that you have a grand to do to give to Craig Mack. Don't get me wrong, everybody. I'm not throwing around a grand to get Craig Mack.
A cry for help.
No.
You don't know.
But I'm just thinking the idea and the concept is quite funny. You can come out. You could actually press an album and go listen. I have an album with all these rappers that I'm rapping with. It kind of buys credibility.
Well, I think that it may have at one point, but that was such a saturated thing that occurred in over the years in hip hop. So, you know, if you look at, say, the Cardinal Official album from a few years ago, it had Akon on it. I think it might have, I don't know if it had KRS-One. It had a lot of big names on it as well. And I'm sure it did very well by Canadian standards, you know?
Well, Cardinal Official, he already has a name. So that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about someone in the hip-hop world like me who doesn't have a name, who no one knows can rap and probably can't rap at all.
But you could just make an album with everyone on it.
Yeah, like you could be working at the bank and go, hey, listen, I got a... you know, $10,000 that are just sitting here that I could use, and I'll spend it to get these rappers and make this album and put it out, and then I could. No one's going to buy it, but I have this credibility. I have this under my belt that I put out.
The closest
I made
thing,
a record with KRS-One.
Metal bands a lot of the time will have their friend, like a famous guitarist, do like a solo or something on a record.
Mm-hmm.
That happens. That even with Brutal Lights, we got Jay Retard. Not that's like super famous, but
that's pretty cool.
He mixed the record.
Now.
He mixed the record, our second record, and then
Jay Retard mixed your second record
for sure. That's why it sounds the way it does. It sounds like a Jay Retard mix, and
But that's what was that a buddy thing?
Pretty much. I mean, I like
in the rock world, it's usually a buddy.
It's a buddy thing. I mean, Jay would mix. You know, as long as he didn't hate the music, I think he would have mixed anything. And that it was a buddy thing mixed with the fact that at that stage for him, I think Blood Visions had just come out and he hadn't become
great record.
Sort of as the like he was a phenomenon, but just amongst a very small amount of people who would know him. You know, because
like
he was
200 people.
Yeah, just garage people. What did you say? 200 people, basically, like
maybe 2,
Memphis, Goner Records, and you know, just people, sort of who were aware of what was going on there. Man, he had a lot of good bands though. But I've been doing shows with him since 2003, oddly enough, and I didn't really know him very well, but I knew him.
I didn't want to go to any of his shows, but I really enjoyed his records.
Yeah, Lost Sounds is so awesome.
I thought he was really
Angry Angles,
amazing.
Awesome. Jay Retard stuff, awesome.
You know, that's
Retard's that's, awesome.
I think that like a lot of genres, like rap, I think, gets really, really stale, and it needs a spark, and someone like Jay Retard will come around. John Spencer did it, like maybe the 10 years before him, and just kind of bring it up. But
well, the Oblivions did it, and then Jay took what the Oblivions sort of had done, and we're still doing because those guys are actually still pretty great. At, like all of the end of, I don't know. Greg is good. Raining Sound is good. The new Jack Oblivion record's really good.
Oh,
I
yeah.
heard that.
You That's cool. Yeah, no.
I'll make you a mixtape, but it'll be on
it.
Tape.
I need to catch up.
Yeah,
but I really want. I mean, there's something about Jay Retard that needs no kind of back catalog.
No
tutorial.
Well,
you just get hooked into it and you go, wow, this is amazing. Like you got to be deaf to not get into it.
The influences are just so awesome. Like where the various things that he is processing and then turning into his own thing, it was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he mixed our record. And he did a guitar
solo. Did he do it on the buddy?
Yeah. I mean, he just he apparently he asked our guitarist John, like he wanted him to, like, tour with him at one point. I mean, yeah, John, Sharon, our guitarist, knew him pretty good. And then, yeah, I'd done shows with him. And people, he just was around. It sucks. It's a crazy thing. Death.
Speaking of death, Heavy D just died yesterday.
Heavy death.
You know, what was crazy is I went on his Twitter page after I heard about him dying, and he had left a tweet 16 hours ago.
Yeah.
It's kind of eerie now with the internet and Twitter and Facebook and people dying, and it's still up there like they exist.
Yeah.
There's a certain person that you probably know, we won't mention his name, who died about a year ago in the Toronto. He's a very prominent guy in the Toronto music scene. And I still get his face popping up under the people you may know in Facebook.
That's really creepy.
And you go on his page and it's just there, and it's really creepy now that, you know, with Facebook and Twitter being almost just synonymous with the person being next to you. You know, Twitter is so immediate that it's like they're right there. And when people die now, like when people die now, this Twitter account remains dormant, and it's just this ghost, and it's really these internet ghosts that are it's making it's an interesting turn.
Well, it's also weird because the pressure is on you, or is your circle of friends a little bit, to maybe write on these Facebook pages, you know, not just let them fade away. You know what I mean?
Right, I hear you.
So
I don't know if you'd want. I'm not. When it comes to death, I'm kind of a guy who just. I don't want to.
You're not Mexican about it.
I'm not what?
Mexican about it. They celebrate the Day of the Dead. They they have a veneration of it. As far as
I treat death more like a superhero, or a comic book, and when it becomes real to me, when it enters into my real life. I kind of turn away from it. It's
impossible.
That's why I like metal, and I like, you know, watching horror movies and metal. It's fun, you know. It makes it fun. It gives it some levity. But when it's real like that, no, I'm not gonna, like, you know, comb through his photo albums, and I'm not gonna do that stuff. There's another guy.
I dwell.
Yeah, you go on their page and you just
go on the page, look at it, what everyone's writing. It's horrible.
I'd rather just go back on YouTube and look at dogs dancing in, like, tutus to TVs.
Oh, by the way, if you're under 30 and you're listening to this right now, I got bad news for you. There's going to be some death if you haven't already experienced it.
So there was this DJ in Toronto who posted his kind of farewell on Facebook and committed suicide, and that was really creepy. That was very creepy. And now this kind of stuff's happening, and with Heavy D, and then you can go on his Twitter account. It's just so creepy, man.
But do you think Heavy D took his own life?
No. I went on the Wikipedia page because I really wanted to know. I'm not, like, the biggest Heavy D fan, but he was someone
I think
that,
Heavy D was probably the biggest Heavy D fan.
He was just the biggest.
That's what I'm trying to say.
But I think the only one that remains now is Fat Joe.
Fat Joe's skinny, apparently.
Yeah, well, then he's going to stick around. Chub Rock, he died a few years back.
No, he's still alive.
Oh, not Chub Rock. Big Pun. Sorry.
Big Pun died.
Chub Rock is still around. Chub Rock. I'm getting them all confused. Is the dude from PM Dawn still alive?
only physically.
So
I just
was an honest mistake.
I just want to interrupt because I think I know where you're going. We're saying most of the heavier rappers have passed on, but the truth is, there's a lot of heavy rappers out there, and there, some of them are still alive,
and some of them are skinny.
Diamond D, who's really an incredible DJ.
Heavy
Diamond, me?
Diamond D was never heavy, dude.
No. Diamond D, I saw him like what? 5 or 6 years ago. He was obese.
Really?
Deeply obese, yeah.
Okay, when he came out,
he wasn't that big.
He was not big at all.
And now he's super big. MOP, pretty big guys at this point. Mashout Posse, MOP.
Oh, MOP.
How about some hardcore Cold as Ice?
Sorry, dyslexia was hit me. I thought you said OMP.
OMD. OMC. Orchestral Maneuvers of the Dark got really fat.
Did you say M.O.P.?
M.O.P., yes.
The guys under Premiere, right?
Yes.
They were produced by Premiere.
Yeah.
They're great. They're big now?
Yeah, they're so heavy.
Wow.
Yeah. And it just keeps going. I mean, like, isn't there a bit of an urge when you get success to just eat a lot of food?
For me, it would be the opposite. For me, I would, just the way my mind thinks and just the way I am, I would go, well, now I can't let it go. I have to be even more diligent and work out even more and maintain this level of success.
I sort of feel that as well. I wouldn't, you know, maybe the more attention is on you.
But that's because, you know, I have a glasses half empty approach to everything. Mm-hmm. And when you maybe get a little lax and gain a little weight, it's because you think you've made it, and now anything you do, anything you touch will turn to gold. That's probably where that kind of mindset is.
Yeah, and that's what hip-hop is often all about. Based on, is this bravado.
Massive machismo and bravado. And that, I mean, I don't really want to delve into the reasons mm-hmm. and the mechanics of that and analyze that. We all kind of can figure it out. Sitting on our armchairs.
Jamaica, colonialism. Just take it from there, folks.
An interesting thought about the whole Heavy D thing that just happened right now. Mm. I don't know when this podcast is going to be uploaded, but as we're doing this podcast, Heavy D isn't even dead for 24 hours. So that we're just kind of talking about it. And another guy who died was Joe Frazier. There was a great HBO documentary a few years back that really brought Joe Frazier some justice from the whole Muhammad Ali thing, and I thought it was really well done. And Joe Frazier is like, he was a sad figure, but I think history will shine more light on him, and it'll be cool. But you know, he lived. I mean, Heavy D was 44 years old.
I know.
Old.
I was so sad when really I heard young. His age. I was like, ugh. But it's just not cool.
Wasn't he one of the rappers who were like, stay off drugs and be clean? And
yeah, he was like a hanging with Mr. Cooper kind of like rapper. You know, he was definitely on the like. Could go on Arsenio, could go on In Living Color, could go. He was very TV. He was a really TV-friendly
after-school special.
And there weren't a lot of guys.
But he was still cool, though. That was the thing.
He was still down with every rapper. He was probably from Brooklyn.
Which was really an interesting thing, because back in the, I'd say, late 80s, early 90s, mm-hmm. there was a real surge in hip-hop to make fun of pop rap, like EPMD's crossover. Uh-huh. And KRS-One was really adamant about it. He was really against PM Don, actually.
Yeah, he threw them off of the stage
once. Did he?
Yeah. They won an award, like a Source Award, or they won an award, Best Rappers, and he bum-rushed the stage and threw them off the stage physically.
So is that what Kanye was doing to Taylor Swift? Was
sort
he trying
of,
to
yeah.
do a KRS-One thing and no one caught on to that?
No one caught on, yeah.
Interesting.
Actually, I think Heavy D was from... Mount Vernon, possibly. I might be wrong. I feel like he's from the same area as Pete Rock and those guys, because I think he did have some Pete Rock production and some other stuff. But then again, you know, he did songs with Big Daddy. You know, Don't Curse is such a great song in a fun way. You know, and it's Heavy D with Kool G Rap, Big Daddy Kane.
These are some heavy dudes.
Huge names. Cool I feel Akinyele was even on that song. He put Akinyele on, you know, who is not a well-known guy at that time.
Okay, so that's where Heavy D was given his pass, because he had aligned himself with some pretty heavy, really well-respected rappers.
And producers. Having respected producers as an MC is almost
a bigger deal. Because I always thought, well, wow, Heavy D always gets a free pass. Like PM Don doesn't, and all these like
Arrested Development pretty much don't.
That's another one. They don't really get this pass. They get this kind of, especially because they had a hit in mainstream hit. A lot of rappers don't like them, but Heavy D was able to bypass all that, and I guess it's because he had befriended a lot of the cooler, you know, rappers out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny, right? He was a pop rapper at a time when there weren't very many. You could count them on, you know, two hands.
Yeah.
And as soon as more rap became pop, he became maybe less relevant.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting. You know, he was something that was so... Yeah, you could say the same about Will Smith, you know? Like, there was a period of time where he was... Whenever he put out a new single... after he'd gone pop and become an actor who was putting out rap songs, everybody was like, whoa, what's the new Will Smith song? Wild Wild West? What is it? Is it going to be, what was that one? Getting jiggy with it, you know? Yeah. But as the years have gone on, nobody, if he put out a new single right now, I don't think anyone would care as much.
No, you know? No. I mean, there's, and also because there's just so many other rhymers out there. You know, music moves on and there's just so many more people who are trying to do it. Even though he's a big movie star, by this point, the genre's been saturated. He'll get lost.
Shit, can I bring it back to that festival for 1 second?
Yeah, yeah.
Because, so Ryan Gosling was all over this Fun, Fun, Fun festival this weekend. He was walking through the crowd, always followed by camera and boom mic.
Isn't he in a band?
He is in a band called Dead Man's Bones. But he was walking through this huge space at Auditorium Shores in Austin, being filmed in character for this show.
I'm fucking rolling my eyes right now.
But do you know why that is?
Why?
The director, Terrence Malick, is making a movie, and I don't know what the deal is, but it's got these scenes at rock festivals, and he's actually he went to Austin City Limits and apparently did the same, and I think he's just doing test shots right now, because if you know anything about Terrence Malick, it takes years for him to make a movie. He did that Tree of Life movie most recently, and then before that, he did Thin Red Line and Badlands, and he's quite a respected director who lives in Austin, which I never knew. And, so he's going around the festival. There's, like, Hollywood all over this festival. Ryan Gosling is wandering around looking in character. Mm. I've never heard of that before.
Weird.
Yeah, interacting with real people.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't really. I get a real kind of knee-jerk reaction where I think, well, go away. Like you're infringing on our thing we got going on here, and don't bring your Hollywood into this. You know, this thing. I think Hollywood always get it wrong when they try to interpret, you know, musical genres and bands and types of music people and stuff. It's fun. I have a thing for Ryan Gosling.
Like a hot thing? You like him?
No. It's funny. There's on the old Facebook there, there's one of my Facebook friends. She posted up something about how much she loves Ryan Gosling. And then two of her other friends, who were also women, they go, me too. And then the third one went, me three. And then after that, I wrote on her thread, you know, I just ran into Ryan Gosling, and we both agreed that he is annoying. I just wrote something and I just put him down. I've never met the guy. He seems like he's a really great actor, but he always acts opposite all the Hollywood women that I find very attractive. So maybe it's just a little bit of jealousy there.
You like
Carey Mulligan, Rachel McAdams, Michelle Williams.
Yeah, Michelle Williams is amazing. She's so... I didn't even know she was a great actress until years after she got famous. I watched this thing. I was like, wow, she's awesome. She's like a very talented actress. And yeah, she's hot too, but she's had a kid. That kind of...
What does that mean?
Well, you know...
Sofia Vergara has like an 18-year-old son. Okay, so Nick, let's go back to Austin, which is what we started. We took a detour with the whole Glenn Danzig thing, because when you bring up Glenn Danzig with me, I'm going to want to talk about him for a while.
Opens up Pandora's box.
Yeah, so what was the reason for you being at this Fun, Fun, Fun Fest in Austin, Texas?
Well, I was doing a little bit of comedy.
Comedy?
Yes, on the yellow stage. I was one of the comedic performers. That list of people included Neil Brennan, who co-created Chappelle's Show.
Neil Brennan, I'm a fan.
Yeah, Louis Katz, who's a very funny guy. Reggie Watts was there.
Okay.
Donald Glover did some comedy.
Don't know.
Donald Glover's on Community. He also has a rap thing called Childish Gambino. He's very popular.
Son of Danny?
Son of Danny.
Is he?
father of Savion.
Okay.
Yeah. He's not the son of Danny.
Okay.
He just has the last name Glover.
All right. And who else?
He's a Glover, not a fighter.
Who was on the lineup as well?
There were a lot of locals, and oh my God, I don't want to sound like I'm complaining about getting wronged all the time, but before I went on, the promoter of the show said, okay, Nick, just make sure you go right up after the act before you, because the crowd will stay that way. Oh, Henry Rollins was also in the bill.
That on your stage?
On that stage, yeah.
Was he headlining?
Yeah, he was headlining the night I performed. And he said, Nick, just make sure you go right up because the crowd, that way the crowd will stay.
That's Henry Rollins talking to you?
Henry Rollins was like, Nick, I just want to say to you, make sure you go right on stage. That was what I learned from Black Flag. As soon as the Minutemen ended, I got on stage and started screaming at the fans until Greg Ginn had set up and the line check was over. And then we would launch into Slip It In. And I would do the male vocals, and I would also do a higher voice, and I would do the female vocals of Slip It In live.
Wow, you're getting really detailed. Did he really say that to
you? No, he didn't. Okay. I talked to him once. He told me that tour was a struggle. That was the one time I've ever spoken to Rollins. Anyway, I...
So he doesn't even speak directly at you. He just has these quotes. Like people hand out their calling cards.
Hey, man, how's it going? Here's a piece of paper.
Tour is struggle. Okay. Good day.
I was trying to enforce that as much as possible. This complimentary rap battle was happening before me where MCs were complimenting each other. Crowd was eating it up.
That's great. Really? Yeah,
it was funny. The host of that, though,
That's a great idea.
Also performing after me. He was doing one thing at 20. I was performing 20 minutes. He was going to go on after me. And he decided to say at the end of the battle, he says, okay, guys, thanks. Come back in 20 minutes. Make sure you come back in 20 minutes. Thanks a lot, everybody. 20 minutes? Yeah, in other words, he was like saying, take off. Come back when I'm back on. Everybody clears out.
It's the same guy who told you to go on right away?
No, this is the performer. Like, promoter said go on right away. Great idea. Then the performer, he throws me under the bus. And then I go up there. Everyone is clearing out. There's nothing worse than trying to get people back as they're clearing out. It's not going to work.
I wish I was there for that.
Yeah. And then, so this is my first thing I say is, come on, don't you have any love for Canada? And because somebody introduced me as being from Toronto. This is in Texas. And this guy, a sleeveless guy, and his sleeveless friend were passing the stage. And he's like, I got no love for Canada. And I always go a little too harsh when I respond to people who are rude to me. So I go, sir, when you dodge the draft, you're going to need Canada. And he just turns around and goes, I'm not dodging no draft. What are you talking about? And I'm just like, okay, thanks. The set, people eventually started watching it, but it was...
Did Henry see it?
Henry did not see it. But
Neil
he did.
Brennan see it?
Neil Brennan did not see it, but I've opened for Neil Brennan before, so he has seen me do comedy.
Okay.
And we've talked on the phone.
And how is all of that? At the end of your set, did you feel like you had a good one?
I was like a 6 out of 10. I was really happy to do it, but I feel like I just didn't. I did my best, but it didn't click as hard as I wanted it to.
Well, how about
I've got to come back to Austin and do it again.
If the promoters of Fun Fest are listening in, I would give Nick Flanagan a second chance for next year's 2012 Fun Fest and put him instead of Glenn Danzig on that stage. And
yeah, put me on the Glenn Danzig stage.
Put him. It's now become the Glenn Danzig stage.
I would love to do comedy on the punk metal crust stage. Actually, that maybe would have gone better if I just hosted or done something on that stage. But
yeah, your audience is more the crust.
I had some of there were punks. I was being watched
MRR crowd
by punks for sure, and yeah, it was okay. It was in the day, but I really appreciated getting the chance to do it, and
yeah,
I would do it again in a second. And I loved it. I mean, I had a great time at the festival and a really good time doing comedy. It's just that I always wanted to be better. I've realized that Because it generally always can be better. Comedy.
Okay.
Brian Posehn opened for Slayer. That must have been exciting for him.
Did you watch that?
I saw the end of it, and I was looking at his butt the whole time because I was like behind the stage watching it.
It's interesting. Now with comedy, Brian Posehn's signed to Relapse, and, yeah. and Don Jameson and Jim Florentine are signed to Metal Blade, and that metal show is doing really well. It's interesting how comedy and metal are fusing together in the later chapters of the heavy metal saga.
Well, I mean, the best metal bands are actually have a sense of humor. I mean, the best things have a sense of have a sense of humor. And metal is, I think, viewed sometimes to be seriously, and most of the time, it's not as serious as the image presented would make you think. You know, sometimes it might be, you know, Priest is pretty serious, I guess.
But I just think that I agree with you that a lot of people who play it who are within the genre have a sense of humor. I just don't like it when people outside the genre think of it as funny.
That's a different thing. I'm not talking about that. Yeah,
exactly. But the people within the genre are definitely just a bunch of jokesters.
I'm talking about Anthrax's aesthetic. I'm talking about, you know, their 80s aesthetic.
But on the other hand, when it comes to Anthrax and their jokey image, it kind of backfired on them.
Yeah, I think so too.
In the end, it worked for a while, and then they kept at it, and then eventually it backfired. And now they've dropped all that, and they're just a really, really good heavy metal band again. Not that they ever were not, but. You know, just behind closed doors, it's really fun to laugh at metal. Mm-hmm. But it's more like, you know, we can laugh at ourselves and each other. And when I say we, I mean just rockers and metalheads. But anyone outside of that who laughs at the heavy metal or the hard rock genre, I have a real fucking problem with. Because it's like, well, you think it's funny? You try to play that. That's right. Always what I say. And I can't play heavy metal. That's why I love listening to it. And it's always by people who play three-chord songs on acoustic guitars who think it's funny. And I just get this really, really bad reaction to that.
Me too.
Sorry. Getting back to the fun jokes of Brian Posehn and Slayer.
He did well. He did well. Which is pretty amazing because there were probably about 16,000 people in the audience.
Could have gone really bad. A Slayer crowd is really cutthroat.
I know they are, but, and you know, Texas is a very, like, Austin especially is a very appreciative of music. Austin. Yeah, Austin specifically is a very appreciative of music crowd. I don't think people in the crowd were strictly from Austin anyway. I think there were probably a lot of people who came to just go to the festival.
Right.
From the surrounding area or even far away.
Austin's a really, really cool town.
It's the greatest. But I just think Brian Posehn is just so affiliated with metal. You know, he's kind of branded himself in a sense, you know, in a pretty organic way in that he likes metal. And so any chance he can get to work with people from metal, he's leapt at. You know, writing on Metalocalypse last season of that.
I think it's great that he's done that, especially because
it's awesome. Anytime you're doing popular. What you like, it's or you're able to incorporate what you enjoy into what you do, if that makes any sense.
And,
you know?
And Don Jameson and Jim Florentine are also, like, you know, doing really well for metal and comedy, you know, and with Don Jameson, you know, we opening up for metal bands and Florentine and Jameson doing that metal show with Eddie Trunk on VH1. I think it's awesome. It's wicked because they know their stuff. They know the music as well. So it's not just these guys who are trying to, like, get a free ride.
Right, it's not morning DJs being like...
Same with... Yeah, exactly. It's Posehn and Florentine and Jameson. These guys really are true fans of the music.
And I think Brian Posehn also kept it a little short, which is really important if you're doing a set like that. You should really be doing...
Especially
15,
with a Slayer
20
crowd.
Minutes to a show like that.
With a Slayer crowd, especially.
They understand four words.
It takes 10 people to just go Slayer to start the chant. So you got to keep it short, keep it moving, and get the fuck out of it.
That's what I hear, is that the Slayer chant is a real thing, and it can destroy band sets.
It's really easy to do. It's just two syllables.
Yeah, Slayer, Slayer.
Slayer, Slayer.
Slayer ruled, though. They killed God Hates Us All. Killed it with War Ensemble. Killed it with a bunch of other stuff.
Cool.
Yeah. I don't think they played Piece by Piece, which made me sad, but I might be wrong.
Do they play that every show?
No, I don't think they play it every show. They did play it when I saw them some years ago, and it made me very happy. I think that's my favorite Slayer song.
Cool.
We should stop this. This is done.
I forgot to mention about the time I saw Danzig.
No, do you want to mention about the time you saw Danzig?
We've kind of reached the end of the podcast. What's the big deal now?
I don't know. Is it a great story? Does it end with fire?
It ends with a fight. I mean, Danzig is really one to provoke.
Yes.
Like he did in the Fun Fun Fest in Austin, which is really the wrong titled festival for someone like Danzig to play.
Well, Tom Araya, when Slayer played, said, "So, are we having fun, fun, fun?"
Did he really?
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Again, that's like fun. He's fun, you know?
Hey, well, I mean, Slayer is fun, and Danzig is fun. But when I saw Danzig, I saw him on the Lucifuge tour.
Right.
Back in the days. Mm-hmm. And it was one of my favorite shows I've ever seen. And the drummer, Chuck Biscuits, was up. His drum riser was, like, super high. Like you need a ladder and a half to get up to Chuck. And at least that's how I remember it in my mind's eye. I was a lot younger then, so maybe 5 feet was, in my mind's eye, it seemed like 10 feet. But anyways, Danzig came out, and they ripped through the first four songs off Lucifuge right away in order. And I can't remember, midway through or near the end, he started a fight with a guy. He just started going, "Hey, come here, come here." And then he just lunged at him, dropped off the stage with his boot on this guy's head. And you know, as a youngster, seeing that violence in front of me from a guy that I didn't, like, I looked up to, I couldn't believe that that was actually happening. Usually you see it in the crowd and you just kind of turn your face. But from the actual performer fighting some guy in the crowd who had obviously paid to be there, who was a fan, and he was beating the shit out of this fan, I was shocked by it.
Well, I mean, you can trace that stuff back to that footage from... It's Misfits. There's Misfits footage of him fighting
people.
And it's always in a weird way. It's always in a way where he's trying to be a superhero. I don't want to, you know, it's like, what? Like, he's leaping. He's always leaping or kicking. You know, there's like, it's always someone's head here, his foot. You know,
it was one of probably that was has to do with the fact that when I got the opportunity to meet him a few months back, I shied away from it.
You thought he'd kick your ass.
Yeah.
He threatened to kick my friend's ass, who was stage managing.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't want to be in his way, and I'd much rather just stay away and remain a fan. Not that if he threatened me, I wouldn't listen to the Misfits or Danzig or Sam Hain anymore. But it wouldn't make me want to listen to them more than I do already, so... I don't know if that had any kind of effect on the podcast.
So,
fuck.
See you next time.